Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome back to another episode. So, I decided I'm going to scrape our introduction for the time being and I'm going to take this opportunity and let you know about our Black Friday deal. So I was kind of thinking what to do and how to kind of give you a huge discount on something, and honestly, I came up completely short. I wanted to raise my prices for a while now. So I think what I'm going to do, rather than, giving you some silly prices and some silly discounts, I'm going to let you know that the deal for $97 per month for one-on-one coaching is ending on the Black Friday, which I think is the 25th of November. So if you wanted to get in, if you wanted to get into the program, do one-on-one coaching, get yourself an accountability partner, get yourself someone who's done it before, someone who's gonna, who you can talk to, who you can share your struggle with, either anonymously or over the video, however you prefer, one-on-one each day, then you might want to use that deal until 25th of November. After that, the price goes up, and it will go up considerably, actually, because I'm at that stage of life where I think, I want to get not necessarily more serious candidates, but I feel like much more value is given out that way. So anyhow, again, there's no Black Friday deal or whatever you want to call it, but I will honor the price of coaching for one-on-one at $97 per month, which I think it's a steal anyways. I don't think you'll get this anywhere else. This includes phone and email supports and one-on-one coaching every day, pretty much. So, and that price is frozen until the Black Friday, which is 25th of November. After that, the price goes up considerably. So if you do want to get in now. That being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was recorded about 2 weeks ago. I was with a really energetic guy called Joel. He's got his own YouTube channel. He also has quite an interesting story of abusing weed, which I'm pretty sure some of the listeners will relate to. That being said, let's get straight into it. Thank you for following, and I'll see you soon. Bye for now. Bye. All right, everyone, we are back with another episode, and I've got Joel here with me, Joel from Sobriety University. Now, before I ask Joel to introduce, let me just share a little bit of a background story. So lately, I'm quite active on YouTube searching for kind of similar outlets, other people doing similar things. And about 4 or 5 days ago, I found Joel and his YouTube, Sobriety University. And he's got some really, really good videos, some very kind of amazing personal experiences that I felt very much related to. So naturally, I had to get him on the channel. So without further ado, Joel, welcome.
Hey, thank you, man.
How are you, Joel? Whereabouts are you?
I am in Madison, Wisconsin. Okay. So over in the U.S., yeah.
So where are you? I'm over in Europe. I'm in Slovenia.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Kind of a between Italy, Austria, Croatia. So.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fairly small country, but we're on the map. All right, Joel. So, I mean, I think you know a little bit about the whole kind of premise of the podcast. I normally kind of start with where it all started and then kind of follow up the timeline just to have it in a little bit of organized matter. So why don't we go a little bit back? So when and how did this journey start with you?
That's a great question. So ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to do... No, I'm just kidding. Right, you know, when you're in elementary school, you write what you want to be when you grow up. I wrote drug addict, so it's from the start.
Yeah. Right on.
It was quite the opposite, actually. So I grew up Catholic and super conservative, and their parents were Democrat or whatever, but we were, it was like really anti-drug, and like I was really far removed from it. My parents didn't drink or anything. So it really started to pick up in high school. Like I had a first time I smoked weed was with my cousins on a trip. We were at a family reunion and he smoked me out for the first time. I got totally hooked. However, what happened is that I went back and tried to show all my friends like this awesome thing that I found, which was weed, and it didn't work. Like the guy we got it from, he packed the bowl too tight, so we couldn't like light it. So it was actually kind of disappointing. But anyway, we saved the weed, and then my dad, he found it in my sock drawer, and he just lost his shit because he was really, he grew up, I didn't say grew up, but he got sober before I was born. So he had a drinking problem. And so he, anything weed, drug related was like a big red flag. And it wasn't obviously a time where weed was like widely accepted. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he kind of freaked out and sent me to work at McDonald's. So that was my mm-hmm. first job. And fucking sucked. Cop the places though, right?
Uh-huh.
And yeah, after that, after I got out of high school, I really started to smoke again. So I started working at a sub, like a sandwich shop, and all the guys smoked there. We'd smoke in the freezer. And that's really when I started to fall in love with weed. And then I went to college here in UW.
Wait, hold on. Can I interrupt you for a second? Yeah. Did you say that you were smoking in a freezer?
Yes. Yeah. So the vents were in the freezer.
Right. Okay.
So we smoked and blew it up. It would just like.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. It wasn't like a long session, though, I would imagine. No,
we would hit real quick and then go back.
Yeah. Coincidentally enough, sorry, I used to work in Subway, and I know the freezers, they can be pretty cold. That's why.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Sorry to that.
Yeah, all good. So after that, went to college here in Madison, mm-hmm. and it's a big party school. And so it was the first time like I was around people that were intelligent mm-hmm. and using drugs, like, cause where I was from a small town. So I don't know about you, but drugs are kind of looked down upon. Like if you smoke drugs, you're like a druggie, kind of like a bad person. Did you have that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it depends on the type of the people you are around, but I feel like villages and just very smaller communities, yes, there would be that type of the feedback feeling. Yeah, absolutely.
So definitely experienced that. And mm-hmm. you can also get around people that are like really intelligent, like really smart, they're getting good grades, it's like, oh, this is cool now. And so really started to smoke a ton in college. We just, you know, it started off small, and I'm sure you realize this, and the people watching, it starts off really like benign, right? Like it's just a fun thing you do with your friends, and then it just slowly escalates. And before I knew it, it was smoking between classes, smoking instead of doing homework. And first year went by, it was all right. Grades weren't very great, but you know, I was like, well, whatever, we'll make it to next year. And of course, the weed just kept picking up over the summer. The weed use, it was like just a whole new world. And mm-hmm. I get into my sophomore year, make it about halfway. And by then I'm smoking like every day. Like I'm living with a few guys, and one of them was dealing. So we got basically a hookup.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, there's no more RAs or potential of getting caught. So we just smoke pretty much all we wanted. And I don't know if you've ever had friends that could like smoke and like not really have major consequences. Did you experience that at all? Like, because that's what I totally felt.
I mean, I think I did, but then being back then, I probably wouldn't see major consequences. But understanding nowadays, especially last year, the effects the addiction had on me, I can see kind of a similar, or at least some of the parallel effects with them as well, which at that point, perhaps I didn't realize. So yes, partly being back then when, you know, I was a heavy stoner using every day, I would have friends in a way that would be like, oh, you can just smoke whenever and whatever and not have any. And that would be with some harder drugs as well, which at that point I just wasn't doing it because it just like it affected me completely different. But yes, but then seeing nowadays and understanding how it works and understanding a little bit better the addiction and just the whole, you know, just the whole the after effects, I think I was a little bit misguided because I can definitely see some of the effects and some of the consequences they felt as well, which I might not have been aware of then. So yeah,
for sure, for sure. I'm on the same thing. It's like maybe in the moment it didn't look as severe, but over time, yeah, it's like, okay, maybe some of these guys do have an issue or whatever, which of course it's not our place to tell, but that's kind of what I noticed is like they were all still doing really well in school and stuff. And like one of my roommates, he like started the Badger Loop for Tesla, which is this thing that goes underground. It's supposed to be this like tunnel that goes like super fast. And he was like the president of it, and he's just this genius. And I'm like, okay, so he can smoke weed all day. So can I. Mm-hmm. And of course, it just doesn't work like that. And so it just slowly started to deteriorate. And then, yeah, took acid for the first time, got into some of like the harder drugs. And it just is like, I just finally realized like how, thankfully, how like messed up my life was in a sense. And how I was kind of living this lie of like, oh, I'm still doing good in school, which I wasn't. I could party like everyone else and I couldn't. And one wouldn't think that that would be like the wake up. Like, okay, dude, I kind of like get your life together a little bit. And then I'm like, oh no, I got to start dealing now because like, I got to make some money. It's like, that was the awakening. Like I have to start earning a living. So I started dealing it. And then just like fast forwards a few years and I was selling dope and, just kind of, yeah, thinking that was my life and not really aware that consequences were coming. Of course, I was getting like little pokes from the universe, like, dude, like you're going to get in some serious trouble if you don't stop this. And I kept ignoring him. And eventually I got robbed like about 10 grand. That was like my downfall. That was when the business shut down. So I used to, I don't know about you, but I had a habit of leaving my keys in the door.
Okay.
Of course, being high didn't help either. Mm-hmm. So one night, my friends, we, the guys I was dealing to, basically, we came back to my house and I left my keys in my apartment door. And I'm pretty sure they picked up on it and then like took them when they left.
Uh-huh.
And then came back the next day. And then like, I came back from work and like 2 pounds of weed was gone. An ounce of wax, a few thousand in cash. I'm like, oh fuck, this sucks.
Yeah,
and I lost that shit. And I like contacted my dealer. And I'm like, dude, I just got robbed. He was connected with someone from my fourth freshman year. Like they were dating, so I was pretty like actually tight with him. So which was a huge bust. And he wasn't just like some random dude. And he's like, all right, man. Well, you got a couple options here. You either get the weed back, you find out who took it and you confront them, or you pay me. Or I bring my friends, my boys down from Chicago and well up from Chicago and we're going to handle it. And I'm like, sure. Fuck, what the fuck just happened? Like,
okay.
I'm just trying to buy a new video game and shit. Like, and I just seen Breaking Bad.
Uh-huh.
There's that scene where the dude's head was on the turtle. If you remember that.
I've seen some of it. I haven't seen much.
Okay. Don't watch it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just like, I'm just like, oh fuck. Obviously paranoia. Probably many watching know paranoia is like, and weed go hand in hand. So instantly the mind's just like freaking out. Couldn't sleep, of course. And I'm like, all right, what are we going to do here? So got some buddies together and we thought we knew who took it. And so we're like, okay, we're going to confront him. Like one of my friends, one of the guys, he bought a gun and it was just like, it was getting pretty serious. And the guy who we thought took it, he had a history of being kind of crazy. So like he had gotten arrested before for like just like graffiti and kind of just very racist stuff. And so he was like a loose cannon. And so my thought process was like, all right, we go after him. Maybe he did take it. Let's say he did take it. We confront him. We whoop his ass or whatever. We get the money back. Well, when he's all healed and well, he's not going to come after like my friends. He has no idea who they are. He's coming right back to my house with his gang. Mm-hmm. And they're going to retaliate. I'm like, I don't want that. Fuck that. And another consequence is if he actually didn't take it and we confront him, mm-hmm. like that's, I mean, that could get really ugly. So my dealer, he would pick me up and we go drive around in his blacked out freaking Maserati. He wasn't discreet. And we, I was like, bro, okay, we both done some shitty shit. Like, can I just like pay you back? And we just don't confront anybody. No one gets involved. And we just like move on. No more karma. I'm just like, fingers crossed. I'm like, please do just say yes. And he like thinks about it for a little bit. He's like, yeah, okay. I agree with you. Well, we can work something out. God. Huge relief. And it was funny because in that moment, though, even though I felt a huge relief from this thing being over, I'm like, okay, my life's going to suck real bad for the next few years. It was like that moment where I'm like, okay, it's time to grow up. It's time to, I'm going to have to pay this guy back about 10 grand. This is not going to be easy. And so what I did is I would work, I'd do these delivery gigs and I get like 800 bucks a week. Maybe like more like 1,000. And I would take 800 of it. I would put it in a little bag. I'd go to a donut shop, get two donuts, eat one donut, of course, give him the other donut and put 800 bucks in the bag. And I did that over and over every week until I paid him off. And thankfully, my parents were able to help a little bit too. So big shout out to the parents. I guess a word to the wise is try to keep a good relationship with the folks as best as possible, because you never know when you might need them. And they bailed me out. They gave me like 4 grand so I could pay him off a bit, because he had to pay his dealer off, because his dealer was going to be like, okay, dude, where's the 10 grand? And then it was just like a funnel. Mm-hmm. And so they really helped with that. And that's like the real kind of, I would say, rock bottom. Now, what's crazy is, I'm sure you've known this as well, is that with addiction, it's like, it can be so in your face and the consequences can be so like, dude, like, are you kidding me? And yet it's like, I'm still going to use, because it's just so powerful. And that's exactly what happened. So even after all that, I was still smoking. I was still selling, because I'm like, okay, I got to make a little money, pay rent or whatever. And it was just so insane. And the final night I stopped was, I was at this like kind of nature park. Mm-hmm. I was using the Wi-Fi from the school because it was associated with the school. I still had like all my credentials and stuff. And a cop comes and I'm smoking. I got a bowl. I got a grinder. Thankfully, I didn't have like a bag with me or like a freaking pound or something like that. And I sprayed this ozone spray. It's like the stuff that covers up the smell. Mm-hmm. I imagine many people know about it because it's like, it's a goat. And he comes and he's like, all right, dude, you can't be here past a certain time. And I'm like, all right, no worries. And it was funny because I had a bottle of St. Perrier sparkling water. Mm-hmm. And it looks like a wine bottle. So he actually asked, he's like, dude, are you drinking? And I'm like, no, I'm feeling so honest, right? Like, no, I'm not drinking. You kidding me? Mm-hmm. He's like, I smell it. And he's like, no, it's just water. He's like, all right, I'm going to write you a warning. And he goes back to his car, and I'm sure if anyone's gotten pulled over, it takes a while. It takes like 10 minutes for them to write the ticket or whatever. So he comes back and he hands me the ticket. He's like, all right, have a good night. And he turns to walk away and he goes, is that weed? And I'm like, you are kidding me. Like the stuff wore off in the minute. And that was the first time I believed in like there was something else, like another force. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's no, like, that was, you kidding me? And I started freaking out, of course. We just talked about the paranoia. So I'm like deleting my dealer's number. I'm like, they're going to search my phone. They know I'm dealing. And then he just comes back. He's like, all right, yeah, I'm writing you a ticket. $350. just give me the weed. And yeah, that was the last day I smoked. So
okay,
a journey. Yeah.
So that was kind of like your wake up call then.
It was a wake up call.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. So kind of just to get a little bit of over to you with the timeline. So when did you start smoking actually?
I started in 20. First time I smoked 2010. I started heavily in 2012.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And then this thing happened with the police when you were pulled over. That was when?
I was a little over 6 years ago. So 2016.
Okay. All right. How long have you been marijuana free now, Joe?
A little over 6 years.
Oh, amazing.
Thank you.
That's amazing, dude. Nice. I gotta say, we actually kind of started same timeline. I started kind of around 2010, 2011 when I came over to England. But I wanted to ask you, I wanted to explore a little bit because, so you mentioned, by the way, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 28.
28, okay. So you started kind of in high school, but when would you say was this transition when you kind of started smoking by yourself? Because I imagine there was a transition from, you know, you having this fun with your friends, just being spontaneous and random, and then you doing it by yourself in the evenings or perhaps even mornings. When, I guess what I'm trying to say is, when would you say that it kind of transitioned to the addiction? And would you be able to kind of describe a little bit the transition or perhaps some of the signs you can see now looking back?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's funny. I'm literally thinking about that transition and how like subtle it is. And I say it started after my freshman year of college because I went back and none of my friends were smoking weed. High school, they would drink and stuff, but they were like, one of them was in sports and he like played football, so he could smoke weed. And so that's really when I started doing it alone. It was still like magical at that time, you know. Music had a really good. It was like, and just I was in my room. It was like at the bong, and like would hide it, and it was fun, like Morrison. And then I say once it got like dark was after the acid trip. I went back. I went to a music school, so I produced music, and I had been chasing, like, that was like my big dream, was to DJ and do all that. I mean, Europe house music, it's like, I fucking love it. I'm meant to be in Wisconsin, I'll tell you that. And so, I went back to live at home because just out of shame and just like, because I dropped out of school for college and, you know, I had a huge ego. I told, you know, I was like the guy that went to the big D1 school, and here I am, like, living back at my parents' place. So how do you cope when that happens? Well, smoke weed and it just one day led to another. And I think one of the signs was that I, like you said, was doing it alone. And two, the other sign was that my mental health wasn't getting better. So a big epiphany with the acid was that, like, I had mental health issues, which I never addressed before. Like, I thought depression was like, and I still today don't know if depression's like real. And this could be a whole other podcast, but what I've learned is like, it was from all the decisions I was making. It wasn't like some disease that I had. That being said though, I understand when people are in that space, it's really painful. And it's like, yeah, this is like, I have depression. Like this is who I am. And I was definitely in that state. And I tried so many things. I had gone to therapy over and over, weeks of therapy. I tried all the medications, like 10 different antidepressants, tried even like a form of shock therapy. It's called TMS, and it just like taps little signals into your brain to try to rewire. So it's not like the old days where they would like zap you and try to make you better. However, all that stuff I did, and it didn't work. I still felt miserable. And of course it was because I was smoking weed, but I couldn't correlate those two. And so, yeah, that's probably when it started to get kind of insane.
So what about you? Yeah, I would imagine, oof, when you kind of, so I think, I mean, the whole process of kind of going from, you know, from kind of this fun social activity to being, to doing by myself, I think it was very kind of a, not spontaneous. I don't actually remember the first time I smoked by myself. I must have been stressed, or it must have been a long day at work. I do know the first time I smoked in the morning, or like 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, I remember we were on the beach, and it was a hot summer day. And I was off that day. But I always kind of said, you know, okay, if we're doing this, we're doing it like, you know, conservative. We either do it in the evening for a little bit of fun. So at that time, I was already smoking by myself. But I remember that day, that summer day, we went down to the beach with friends, and we had some weed. And it was 10 or 10:30 in the morning, and we started smoking. And I think we were about 2-3 joints in by noon. And I was just laying down in the sun, thinking, "What is going on? Like, how did we get from, you know, from me being this? I don't know. It just, you know." It just went so fast that, you know, but again, I had these little warnings. I had these little nuggets in my head that I would get, but I never really kind of acted up on them. That's why I asked, because it's almost like we all have these little warnings, right? And that's why I want to reiterate on the podcast lots of times as well. We always get these little warnings, but we don't really act on them, you know. We almost like dismiss them in a way, even though it's our own body, our own mind telling us, listen, I don't think this is healthy anymore, you know. So that was kind of interested where it all started and where this transition went. And I'm interested, actually, you mentioned depression. So it's almost like, you know, nowadays, especially in a lot of social media network, kind of you get this very parable argument where it's like, well, but marijuana treats depression. Yeah, so what's your take on that, saying you had this whole experience as well?
Well, I think that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's like, yes, it can cover it up,
mm-hmm,
for sure. And I think maybe it can. And now, of course, I have to remember that everybody's different. So there can be someone where marijuana is just a cure. I'd like to meet them, though. And
I
think it can help people. Like, if they're really, I can't even say that with honesty. I guess from my experience, I think it can help people wake up a little bit. Like, mm-hmm, if they have like a really big ego, if they really are not self-aware of anything, it can really start to open that, because that's how I was. I was like Mr. High School, like, mm-hmm, you know, there's cool kids and there's not cool kids. And then I smoked weed and it's like everyone was cool and like looks didn't matter or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it was like, that was huge. And I think I'm super thankful that happened. But yeah. What do you think?
You see, I think there are certain, that marijuana has a certain place in this world. But I would say that, you know, see, the thing is, when you analyze addiction, I guess, or when you analyze where, you know, when you try to figure out when the things went too far, you have to kind of look at the past, right? And for me, perhaps, I don't know, there were some mental health issues when I was younger, but I wasn't aware of them. But what happened once I was 24, 25, and I tried to quit, and I couldn't quit for a day, and I kept on doing it, that's when my mental health just went completely down, right? And that's when the real depression, I guess, not necessarily permanent, but just kind of a temporary depression, when I was out in and out of these stages, when I would be high, and then I wouldn't be high, and then I would be high again. So that's when the real depression kind of kicked in, because I knew what I'm doing, yet I kept doing it. So it was almost like hurting myself, you know? Now, as far as the marijuana treating depression, I I'm not going to say it's a complete bullshit because, you know, there is honestly, you know, this, we are not, we, this is not, you know, black and white. We're not dealing with, you know, like I, the more I do this, the more I understand that there is certain mental conditions that we are all kind of, you know, we all can suffer from in a way, and marijuana does help some of them. But the problem I see with marijuana is that, you know, the longer you use it, the less fun it is. And then before you know it, you're in this cycle. And that's when it becomes a problem. And that's why I do this whole mind ash joint, because after a while, you realize you cannot really quit anymore. And it's not just something that helps the depression. It's something that actually alleviates the depression. So if you wanted to do it from the beginning because you wanted to treat the depression, you know, doing it because you cannot quit, so it's almost like a, it's almost like a, you know, a magic cycle.
Yeah,
but yeah, I do think it has some utility as far as the depression goes, but I wouldn't say it's a you know. I think there are other alternatives as well we should explore. So
yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said that. Yeah.
Alrighty, Joel. So that was quite a fun ride, and I've got to say I'm quite thrilled as well that you decided to share the whole dealer story and whatnot. Looking back, and I think you mentioned a little bit your mental health, kind of depression and stuff like that. What would you say that kind of fueled up this? If you would have an answer, if you think there is something. That kind of started this whole, and you kept continuing it as well. The whole marijuana abuse and perhaps the dealing as well.
Well, what I've learned is that I think all addiction stems from some sort of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the hardest parts of getting sober, having to face that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone becomes ready at a certain point. As you know, you became ready. But if you were to ask yourself like a year before, would you have been ready?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no way. It's just like the spirit is like, it's like when the spirit's ready, it's gonna take action. I think a big part of it for me, like going back to your original question, was money. Like
mm-hmm.
I always wanted to be rich.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to school originally for dentistry, and because I wanted to make bank, not that I cared a shit about people's teeth. and then I very, very quickly realized how good of grades you have to have. And like I went to the first, whatever, the dental meeting, like the club meeting, and
mm-hmm.
they're like, yeah, so, you know, it's about nowadays, it's like a 3.8 minimum to get considered. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to take my free pizza and I'm going to get the hell out of here. And that's, of course, like that was like a big kind of moment because I, like my dream of being rich was no longer there. Mm-hmm. And so fast forwarding, I originally left school after the acid trip to pursue DJing. Mm-hmm. I actually love music. And so like that was like a good fuel. However, it was right at 2014. So it was when the big room scene, like Martin Garrix, all the like festival stuff was just popping off. Ultra Miami was like the biggest thing. And I'm like, dude, 4 months, give me three months tops. I'm going to be there. I'm a dreamer.
Uh-huh.
And very quickly, I realized, okay, this might not be possible. And so that, again, caused me to use more because that dream was coming to an end. And I think with the man, it's just like you said, it's that word cycle. It's just like one little thing built on another, and before you know it, it's just like I just was. I felt like a loser.
Mm-hmm. It's actually really interesting what you just said, and I often hear this on the podcast, but I rarely talk about it, and it's almost like the stoner's imagination, I call it. And I feel like actually Charlie Dice, he he talked about it, the dreams and aspiration of 20s, but I don't think it's necessarily the 20s. I think it's when you're heavily smoking and you are kind of an ambition person. You almost have this alternate reality that you have in your head. And it's almost like, okay, I'm going to do this and this and this and this and this. But that only happens when you're kind of stoned, right? Then when you're sober, right, you're almost back to yourself. Your belittled version of yourself, even, you know. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about this, how this is, because I can completely relate to that. Now it's definitely something I experienced in my 20s. Going back to what you said earlier, oh, I'm going to be a DJ and then 3 months later I'll be at EDM and then feeling like a loser.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Hey guys, follow me on SoundCloud. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I love that. Soda's imagination. There were so many nights that I would be making music and I'd just be like, wow, what is this gift from above?
I can. You see that? That's what I said. I completely relate to that. It's almost like, yes, absolutely.
Like, am I a god? Like, I really completely. Jesus. And then, yeah, just like you said, as soon as the weed wears off, you go to bed, you wake up the next morning, and you listen to this savant, you know, gospel. It's like, ooh, this kind of sucks, but you can never say it out loud. Yeah, you're still like, ego's not going to ever admit that. So it's like, it's just like, I'm in a different state. It's okay. I just smoke a little bit more and we'll get back into it. I remember I have buddies over to show them my tracks, and I knew something was wrong because it's just like, what a move. It's just like, their heads would not move at all. Like, you know, hear a good song, you're just kind of like grooving. They're just zero movement in any part of their body, and their faces would just be like, no smiles.
Holy God.
It'd be absolutely, they'd be uncomfortable.
No, I love that. And you know what? I mean, it's really fun that, you know, you can look back to this experience and have a laugh, because I feel like realizing this is a really, really huge step. And I actually made a video 2-3 weeks ago on the YouTube where I said, we're all unique, but we're not special. And I think that's one of the keys, kind of weed, gears up. It's almost like, yeah, I'm special. I'm going to do something. I can function on weed very fine. It's almost like you go into the addiction communities and you hear the word high functioning stoner, you know. It's almost to that perspective. So I'm really glad that you explore and talked a little bit more about it. And I hope you don't take the wrong way. I didn't want to take the dick. I just wanted to kind of, you know, shout it out because I can completely relate to that. And, you know, I had this special moments when I was thinking that I'm something special until I woke up and I realized I'm just another stoner. So
what was your creative thing? Or
it was, I mean, mostly for me, it was, at one point I wanted to be a DJ as well, actually, funnily enough. Yeah. But the thing with me is, back then, is I was just, I don't know, I was more of a, you know, jumping from one idea to another idea to another idea rather than actually putting the work in. So I would be like, yeah, that sounds fine, but then this sounds fine as well. Or I would be doing 4 or 5 things at the same time. So it was almost like, you know, at the end, I didn't do anything, even though in my head I would be doing this and this and this and this. And yeah, exactly. Absolutely. The God aspect and just feeling like I can do this, you know. So Alrighty, Joel, going a little bit forward to the future. So when does the whole sobriety university start, and how do you then decide that, you know, you want to go from that old Joel to the new Joel, helping people and doing what you do?
That's a great question. So caught it on the using days. It's like, whoa, back to my reality here. This is a good reality, though. See, this is a blessing to getting sober. You get the pop back, and you're like, oh, yeah, life's good. What we were just talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was, let's see, it was a little over 2 years ago. Close to 2 years ago. A little less than 2 years ago. I was doing these delivery gigs. That's been something I've been doing. I think they're great. They're great. I can listen to podcasts, YouTube videos all day. And just kind of really, I was able to process a lot of stuff I was going through just in my car. Could work what I wanted. I didn't have to be around people, because I know quitting, like in that first, those first couple of years can be pretty tough, like socially. So I definitely need to be in a place where I can just kind of be by myself. And anyway, I was at a point where I was like, kind of like sick and tired of where I was. Even in sobriety, that happens, where it's like complacency can set in. And there's these two guys, Victor Odo and Aaron Dowdy. They're both YouTubers, and they're fantastic. I discovered Victor Odo right when I was getting clean, about 4 months in. He is crazy, because I found his channel. He had like 2,000 subscribers. He's at like 313 now, and I've just 313,000. I've just been watching his progression, which has been so cool. And he talked about the dark night of the soul, which is this experience where basically all your ego baggage comes up, and it's just like, whoa, like suppressed stuff is just at its surface, trying to get out. And it's like interacting with the real world. And it's like super uncomfortable, because it's like, why am I acting like this? And it's just kind of trying to get out of it, your system. And anyway, he was a heroin addict. They have YouTube channels. Totally recommend checking them out.
So what was the second one? So the first one was Victor Odell. Yeah. What was the second one?
Aaron Dowdy.
Aaron Dowdy. Got you. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And basically, I got an email like, hey, do you want to quit your 9-to-5 and change your life? And I was literally just like, just complaining how I hated my 9-to-5. I was like, oh, it's perfect. Check this out. And it was pre-recorded, and they were selling their course on how to build a YouTube channel, how to do coaching or whatever. And it was like, we're doing a deal. It's like, we'll give you the whole course for $1,000. And I don't know about you guys, but I definitely get skepticism when I hear it, even though now I'm actually trying to do it myself. I totally know where that skepticism comes from. And it's tough being on the other side. It's like, oh, I get how this is like totally salesy, but so I signed up, and it was just like a step-by-step process on how to start a YouTube channel, how to get a camera. Basically, I just used my iPhone, a little mic from Best Buy for like $20 that blocks out the wind, and set up a logo and you're good to go.
That's interesting. So how did the whole name come around? That was actually intrigued as well, the sobriety university. It's almost like it's right on. I love the name.
It just came. It was one of those things where sometimes the universe, this is what I've learned now, that if ever I get a good idea, it's the universe giving it to me. It's not my godly gifts. It's like, so that's, it was like, okay, this is like perfect. Boom, this is it. And the logo, there's a site called, so if anyone's trying to make a YouTube channel, there's a site called Fiverr where you can pay $2 to someone in India and they whip up a logo for you. $2 and
the logo was
perfect.
There.
Angle.
Perfect,
yeah.
So Joel, how can people get in touch with you? How they can use your service, and what do you actually do as well? Let's start with that, perhaps.
Yeah, so I can be found at Sobriety University. It's the YouTube channel. Sobriety-University is my website. I just started coaching So it's something I'm brand new to. So I'm definitely like super excited to get going and be able to help people the best I can. And so any help to get that going would be great. And right now I'm doing like first five people that sign up will get it for free. So for like a testimonial. So definitely cool to get my feet in and stuff like that and kind of connect with some other people. Instagram, sobriety university _. And I mean, it can all be found on the YouTube channel, all the links and stuff. I'm not a huge Instagram guy. I don't know about you.
I left pretty much all the socials about a month ago and I only focus on YouTube now because I just can't keep up. So
sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Speaking of addiction, those things can be addictive.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even YouTube analytics can be addictive.
Dude. Oh, you can't.
Yeah. Joel, what sort of coaching do you do as well? I guess that would be fair to say as well. You didn't mention what sort of coaching you do.
Oh, yep. So it's going to be one-on-one coaching.
Okay.
For people trying to get clean from a variety of things. It could be weed, alcohol, stuff, porn, sugar, just basically any real addiction. What I've learned is that once you can get through one, that the same tactics can be applied to all the other ones. Man, it's just like you're just kind of getting the bats in, knocking them out of the way, and it's a grind for sure, but getting through that first one's the most important. Kind of they say in recovery, you gotta just get through that first day and the first week, month.
Yeah. Joel, I'm so happy you said that because it's almost like people forget that like quitting the addiction is a skill. And once you have that skill, it's an invaluable tool that will set you for life and it will help you with many, many other aspects of life. So I'm so happy that you said that. Very true. It's almost like amazing.
Yeah.
All right then. Joel, we kind of coming up to the time. Is there anything else you wanted to say? Anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't think so. Just thank you so much for having me. This has been awesome. Guys, tune in. We're gonna be reversing roller holes.
That's it.
Up here, so yeah, hear his story as well. And I guess message is it's like you can get through it. Like you can overcome it. You gotta want it. Gotta want it. But as long as I was in my life and that I've overcome it and am just living this like awesome life, it's just available. It's free. You just got to go grab it.
Joel, that is very spot on. And it's true. I think once you come out of an experience like this, you just appreciate being sober and just appreciate every day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, everyone. This was Joel from Sobriety University. Again, Joel, how people can get in touch with you?
YouTube, Sobriety University. Links will be on the main page.
That's it.
And yeah.
All right. That's it for now. We'll see you in the next episode. Over and out. Joel, stay there.